Hi, this is Tom Browning, and you're listening to the Red Hot Mama on RedHotMama.com, home of the Reds.
Greetings, baseball fans. You've got the Red Hot Mama coming at you from Redsland. This week, I'm super psyched to have a very special guest on the podcast. He's an icon in Cincinnati, one of the newest members of the Reds Hall of Fame, the owner of the only perfect game in Reds history, and the last decent starting pitcher the Reds developed. I'm pleased to present my conversation with Tom Browning.
So the whole reason I'm getting to talk to you today is because of your book. For people who haven't read it yet, can you tell us about it?
It talks about growing up in Wyoming a little bit. I start off talking about growing up in Wyoming, becoming a Reds fan back in my formative years of being a baseball fan. They were the team that I enjoyed watching and pulled for, and then was fortunate enough to get drafted by him, and I kind of lead into my professional career and about what it was like in a few stops into minor leagues, and then some stories about that. And then I get to, you know, the guts of the book is really basically what took place during my career, accentuating some of the highlights, you know, night Pete broke the record, obviously my perfect game, going to World Series, and some things that took place along the way, the managers, the coaches, some of the players, some of the things that took place, you know, some funny things. I didn't criticize anybody or anything. I just talked about, some of the humorous things that took place during my career.
So what was the inspiration to write this book now?
Well, actually, there's been a few guys, one of them, Bob Forsch, who did one for the Cardinals. I know Ron Kittle did one for the White Sox. I guess this publishing company called the Reds and asked them if they knew of anybody that would be interested in doing something like that, and would maybe have a chance to do a book along those lines, and I said sure, and it turned out that they asked me to do it, and that's how it worked out.
Well, I read the book and I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it, but I couldn't help but notice that the stories in there were squeaky clean. You mentioned that you didn't criticize anyone.
On the light side, I didn't want to, get into the nuts and bolts of, the grind of baseball and some of the hardships and some of the things that took place, that aren't so enjoyable. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to tell stories of things that took place that were funny to me and that I was able to be a part of or be a witness of. I didn't really want to get out there and blast anybody and criticize, because I'm not that kind of guy. I just wanted to, I thought I could just, tell a lot of stories throughout my career that I thought would be enjoyable for people to read, and yet not, put a stain on anybody or put a dark side on anything. I just wanted to be a lighthearted kind of read, and that's basically how I think it came out.
Were there any stories that you would have liked to have told that didn't make it in?
No, not really. I just tried to remember the ones that I told, and I just kind of did it chronologically. I mean, I had to look up a lot of things that took place as far as performances and stuff on my part and some other guys' parts. But no, I told pretty much what I wanted to tell, and there was some, I cleaned up a few of them because I didn't really want to make them too bad. I mean, there were some swearing and stuff in there, and there's some F words that were tossed around. But for the most part, I just wanted to give a lighthearted approach and something that would be a good read and yet not be overly opinionated.
So what's your favorite part of what did make it into the book?
Probably just reliving the World Series year. That to me was the epitome. As a kid growing up, you always knew that the best place to play in the world was the major leagues, and the epitome or the top of the mountain, whatever you want to call it, for playing would be a chance to go to World Series and be a world champion. And that's really what I tried to do. And I would say there was more written on that 90 year and the World Series stuff than anything else. So
that
was my perfect game, I guess. I mean, I liked reliving the perfect game as well. But being a team sport, and I try to consider myself a team player. I really enjoyed the camaraderie and all the things that went with that 1990 World Series year, and how enjoyable it was, and actually how taxing it was emotionally from just playing at that level, and obviously playing in the postseason and all the pressure that comes with that.
One of the things that you didn't talk a whole lot about, but I know must have been an issue in the era you were in, was the racial relationships within the clubhouse. What was that like?
Oh, we got along great. I mean, a lot of it, when I think, to be honest, might have been blown out of proportion, or not that it didn't take place, but most of the guys were pretty lighthearted about it. I mean, we used to tell black jokes and white jokes and all that. I mean, just to,
in a fun manner, you know, not without any undertones or, you know, I never had a problem, and I think majority of Major League Baseball doesn't have a problem with it, with the black and whites and Latinos, because, you know, like I said, we're a team when we get there, no matter what color we are, and you know, but that doesn't say that we didn't have a lot of fun making fun of one another. You know, being white guys or being black guys or Latin players, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, for the most part, we never, ever had any problems with race or even religion, for that matter, but never anything with the race card. So, I mean, guys used to say things. I remember Dave Parker, you know, saying, hey, can a black man take a pitch around here and stuff like that, just to make fun of things. But, you know, for the most part, you know, it was all kind-hearted and nothing ever with, like I said, any undertones or whatever you want to know, saying things in a racial manner because we're racist. You know, I just didn't ever consider any of those teammates of mine anything other than my teammates. I mean, color never really came into play.
One of the raunchier stories that we've heard about having happened in that era, not race related, obviously, but is the big party at Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, it was a good party.
You mentioned that briefly in the book, I believe.
Yeah, I wanted to do that. I wanted to make sure it was brief.
But it was, yeah, it was a very clean version. Is there any dirt you can give us?
Not really. You know, like I said, I don't want to really, you know, I'm not into naming names or things like that. I know that there was a lot of girls there, a lot of pretty girls. A lot of them weren't wearing a whole lot of clothes. But you know, it's you know, it was just a party. I mean, like I said, it was just, we were just out there to drink and have a good time, and you know, the scenery was good. Yeah. That's about all I can say there.
So
it was a lot of fun, though.
So you've been working with the Reds this season. Are you still going out partying with the team?
Oh no, I don't. Heck, I don't even party. Even I didn't party with them when I was down in spring training stuff. I may have stopped in those days. I mean, I don't run as hard as I used to. You know, back then, heck, because I used to go to the ballpark and I used to, you know, put my running shoes on and disappear for about 40 minutes and sweat it all out or whatever. Now I just, I don't do much. I play golf, so.
So how's it been being back with the club?
It was awesome. Like I said, it's really the first time that we felt like we were part of the organization again. I mean, I poured my heart and soul into this organization. I wanted to spend my whole career there. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. I had to go 1 year to Kansas City before I ended up retiring after I broke my arm. But it was nice to be back in the fold and actually feel like we were part of that organization again.
What things, with the start of the season, we could use something to be optimistic about with the pitching, or, well, with the bullpen, but what things have you seen that would make you feel optimistic about the Reds pitching this year?
Well, I thought they threw the ball pretty darn good in spring training. You know, I would like to have seen them stretch it out a little bit more. But they've got four solid starters, and actually five. And Dave Williams just doesn't try to go too fast. I mean, he has a sense to speed things up when he's struggling instead of backing down. But for the most part, they got four or five solid starters, you know. And believe me, once they start pitching and they start pitching consistently into the sixth and seventh inning, the bullpen will not be nearly as taxed. So, you know, I think once they kind of get into the grind of the season, things will start working out. You know, they'll start being more more consistent and obviously get their legs underneath them and be able to go after it, you know, pitch the way that we would like to see starters pitch.
So you were a guest instructor there in spring training, and they've got your former teammate Mario Soto there as the pitching coach for the Louisville Bats.
Right.
And you were doing some announcing for one of the organizations, right?
I did a couple guest announcing things for, I don't know if it was a local station out of Dayton for the Dayton Dragons. I did two games, a Thursday and a Friday night game, actually opening night and the next night. And I loved it. You know, unfortunately, I didn't know the players, and it was really hard to kind of get into being totally committed to talking, you know, because I was unfamiliar with a lot of the players. So
is that something you think you'd be interested in doing long term, or would you be more interested in
I sure like putting that uniform on. That was a whole lot of fun, you know, being able to go out there and help, you know, help these guys and, you know, hopefully make them better players or be able to maybe say something or do something that might maybe help them better their career. So
in addition to coaching, you know, and playing golf, what are you up to these days?
Well, I'm cleaning out my garage. I'm just kind of doing some things around the house. You know, I do what they have. They have this, it's called Legend Suite at the stadium, where people can rent out the suite with, you know, 15, 20 people. And then they bring me in there to be like a guest celebrity or whatever, a former player or whatever. And I sit there and we have our pictures taken. And, you know, I sit there throughout the game with them and try to entertain them and tell them stories and stuff. And, you know, make some appearances here and there. And now I'm, you know, I get a, not that it's a, you know, a demanding thing, but I do have a little bit of a book tour because I'm going to a few places here and there trying to sell my book. And I actually help raise money for the Reds Community Fund as well, but, you know, just trying to help get that book out there and see if people enjoy it. So, I don't expect it to be in the top, you know, whatever there is, however they rate books and stuff. I just, you know, it's a regional thing, so I'm just hoping that, you know, people who buy it enjoy it, and I can say that I'm an author.
So you said in the book, and it sounds like you really don't mind interacting with fans. Is that really the case? You don't mind people coming up to you and talking about their Reds experiences?
Absolutely. I'm a laid-back guy. You know, not a whole lot shakes me, and I don't mind. You know, there was a time, I'm sure, when you're playing and you're sitting down having dinner and somebody comes up and interrupts you that, you know, you can get a little irritated. But for the most part, you know, I take things as they come, and I'm just glad they still ask for autographs, and I'm glad to talk to them at any length of time, really, about what I think of the Reds and what's going on with them and their chances of winning and stuff. So,
what's the strangest interaction you've ever had with a fan?
I've had to sign the girl's underwear before when it was still on. Guys tell me about their son who's maybe 10 or 11 saying that he's going to be in the big leagues. He can throw a breaking ball and stuff, and things that I don't really want to hear about, because, you know, if you're 10 or 11 years old, you ought to be just learning to throw the ball on the plate and not worrying about throwing curveballs and stuff. But, you know, just to how many people try to, you know, sometimes say things that, I don't know if they feel intimidated by me or uncomfortable around me, but try to make themselves, you know, a little bit better than maybe what they really are. And it doesn't matter to me. You know, I was nobody at one time, too, and I was okay with that. But, you know, it just sometimes they tend to be overbearing and then, you know, try to chum up to you a little bit too much. But for the most part, they're all pretty respectful and kind of giving my space.
So you're going to talk about that stuff in your next book?
I don't know if there's going to be another book. I mean, the guy named Dan Stupp helped me write it. Actually, he wrote it. I just sat there and I told him stories, whether he typed the stories in or tape recorded them and then kind of put them into a book form. You know, my next book, if I were to do one, would probably be something a little bit different genre, I would think, because I'm, you know, my baseball stories are pretty much in the book, and that's about it. I mean, the ones that I think I can tell without, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of things that went on in baseball that, you know, are rated more than R, a little harsher than R, but, you know, those things are, you know, those are things like we always say, you know, what is done in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, those type of things. So, you know, there's a fraternity there, and we try to keep that fraternity as close as possible. And, you know, when Canseco came out with his book and named names, you know, there was, you know, I don't have a problem with the book. I just don't like the fact that he named names and said things about other people, other players, especially teammates, because there's a trust factor there. And, you know, we're not in this to make ourselves look better if it at the expense of somebody else. You know, I just wanted to tell stories of what took place during my career that people would enjoy reading and some would even remember. You know, and hopefully that's what that book served.
Well, do you have any closing thoughts? Any closing messages you'd like to give to the readers of Red Hot Mama?
You know, I'm excited about the Reds. I'm excited about the direction that they're headed. I'm excited about Mr. Castellini and the Williams brothers for stepping in and doing what they're doing. They want to put together a winning organization from top to bottom, and they're willing to, you know, I think they're willing to do that in whatever it takes. I know that the players are willing to are going to respond to them because of how much they've shown of interest in trying to put a winning program together. But boys will be boys, and when we get into that clubhouse, we act like a bunch of little kids, only in adult fashion, and they pay us to do it. So, you know, there's not a better job in the world, in my opinion. Being a starting pitcher, I got to take 4 days off, so I got a lot of goofing off to do, and I did a lot of goofing off. You know, such as leaving and going, sitting on the roof in Chicago during a game and things like that. But, you know, I think the fans should be excited about the direction they're headed in, and I'm excited about it, and I'm just glad, like I said, they asked me to be a part of it.
I think we are excited about it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's really been a pleasure to have you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Amanda.
Tom Browning's Tales from the Dugout is available online at www.browningbook.com for $19.95, or for $5 more and get yours autographed. That's all for this week. Until next time, stay off those Chicago rooftops and go Reds!